The Lord be with you. Hear the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Mark. Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there, yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that you may go, the demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Then he returned from the region of Tyre and went by the way of Sidon towards the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. They brought him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears. And he spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered them to tell no one, but the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. I wonder if you've ever had a day where it feels like everything was against you. From the very first moment until the last, everything that could go wrong went wrong. Perhaps it started with a really terrible night's sleep. You just couldn't get to sleep, and you kept waking up expecting your alarm to go off and seeing the clock and realizing, no, it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. When it does get to the time for your alarm to go off, your alarm doesn't go off, and you jump out of bed, you've overslept, and to top it off, you're starting to feel a bit ill. There's a scratch at the back of your throat, and you're feeling a bit sniffy. You go to the medicine cupboard, and there's no medicine there. So you go downstairs, go and have your breakfast, but your favorite cereal, someone has put the box back empty, and there's no cereal left. You look outside and it's just started to rain heavily, and you remember that you were going to buy a new umbrella because the one that you've had is broken. So you go out to the car, you put the key in the ignition, try turning it, but the car doesn't start. It comes up with a warning and you need to contact a mechanic. So you decide, okay, I'm going to go and get the bus. So you walk there without an umbrella, you're completely soaked by the time you get onto the bus. And you end up sitting in the only available seat, which is next to a young person who is sniffing and coughing the whole time and wiping their nose. You get in to work, finally, half an hour late, to discover your colleague is off sick, so they want you to stay late. Eventually, you finish your shift, you get home, dinner is cold by this point, the children are irritable, you get a phone call from your parents about a sick relative, and you get to bed eventually, and your partner's already asleep. You lie back on your pillow and think, what a day. Now, those are elements of autobiographical, but I'm sure we can all relate to elements of that where you've just had one of those days. It just feels like everything that could go wrong seems to go wrong, and sometimes really seriously too. In our gospel reading, we come across a woman who goes to Jesus, and she seems to have everything against her, doesn't she? The reason why Mark and Matthew both record this in their Gospels is to teach us that we need to go to Jesus. We need to go to Jesus, not just when things are really bad and serious, but at all times. But how should we think? How should we approach this idea of going to Jesus? How do we actually do that? Well, our passage shows us two things that you would have think were a paradox. You know, they shouldn't exist together, but they do. And the two things that our reading show us is that we are to go to Jesus with humility and persistence, but we also to go to Jesus with confidence and trust. So on one hand, humility and persistence. On the other, with confidence and trust. And we're going to look at this woman. We're not told her name, but we're going to see how that helps us to see how we can go to Jesus with humility and persistence and with confidence and trust. Let's have a look at our gospel reading, verses 25 to 26. It says, "But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, about Jesus, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter." So I just want to pause there and just look at those verses and think about what are some of the things that are against this woman. What are some of the things? Now, I'm going to make this a bit interactive. See if you can spot anything here that might be against her or seemingly against her. Can you spot anything? Some of the quite obvious. Any ideas? Yes, she's a Gentile. A Gentile, so basically, the world was split into two people. You've got the Jewish people and you've got the Gentiles. Now, the Gentiles were seen as outsiders. They couldn't just worship along with the Jewish people. They couldn't come into the temple. They had to stay further out. So that's a really big thing. Yes. Any other ideas? Syrophoenicia. So that's something that Mark's put in as a really important point. So you've got Phoenicia, which is, I think, North Africa somewhere, but Syrophoenicia is in the area, and they were long-time sort of hostile enemies. There was a lot of history there. So they were, not only was she not Jewish, but she was culturally, she was at odds with the Jewish people. Her nationality was something against her in this situation. Yeah, absolutely. And what else is against this woman? Any other ideas? She's a woman, absolutely. So in that culture, women were seen very much as second class. They weren't just allowed to approach men, certainly not a rabbi, and engage in conversation. So she had that against her as well, absolutely. A couple of other things, or one other thing as well. What about her family situation? I heard over here, yes? Yeah, her daughter was possessed, or she had some kind of spiritual affliction. This seems to be something that seemed to happen quite a lot. It seems a lot of occasions in the Gospels we read about it. Now, we have to be careful not to attribute things to that aren't in the text. Sometimes people might say, oh, it might, she had a mental illness or something like that. Well, having a mental illness is very different to having a demon. So I think we just need to go on what the text says. But there was clearly something spiritually attacking her, making her life really miserable for this woman's daughter, some kind of unclean spirit causing her a lot of pain and harm. So we've got a list of those. Thank you for that. Well done. But she still goes to Jesus. She's having a bad day. There's a lot of things against her, but she still goes to Jesus. But when she then gets to Jesus, she discovers that Jesus is trying to keep a low profile, isn't he? We know that all sorts of people went after Jesus. They wanted to have healing. They wanted to hear him. Think of that famous one where he's with the disciples going across the lake on the boat. And he's like, all right, we'll get a bit of peace. And all the other people, they just walk around the side of the lake and are there ready. Hello, Jesus, when he turns up on the shore. So Jesus, yes, he's fully God, but he's also a human being too. He gets tired. He needs to have a rest, just like any of us. He's trying to keep a low profile. And eventually she finds him and asks for healing for her daughter. But how does Jesus respond? Well, let's have a look at verse 27. It seems puzzling at first. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." Now, what's going on here? Who are these children? Who are these dogs? What's this food? The children are Jesus's people, the Jews. The people who had a special relationship with God, who God had made promises to throughout the Old Testament. And the food is, well, his teaching, his healing, the blessings that come from him. But who are the dogs? Well, we're left to assume that they are the Gentiles. In fact, what's going on in the original is the word for that kind of dog is more puppy. Now, dogs weren't cute, nice pets like the ones you see at Crufts. They weren't handsome animals. These were scavenging animals. They were unclean. They would hang around in nasty areas and do all sorts of harm. It was a throwaway, an insult term normally, but Jesus doesn't use that word. He uses the word for a puppy, which seemingly at first seems like Jesus is against her. Why would Jesus be against her? Well, we know, because we've read on from here, in fact, he's the only one who's truly for her. Jesus has said, he used the word for a puppy. It's a bit more playful. Now, we know that Jesus came for his people first, the Jews. We read the beginning of John, it said he came to his own, but he also came for the non-Jews too, people like us. Well, how might she react? If this was 2024, it's quite possible she would be very offended. She would walk away and just forget about him. But that's not what she does. Verse 28, but she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." You see, she isn't acting offended. She might have been hurt at that point, perhaps. But she uses Jesus' words to engage with him. And Jesus is impressed. Not by her use of words, but by her faith. And actually what Jesus is doing here, and we see this really clearly in Matthew's account, is Jesus is drawing this faith out of her, and he's actually going to hold her up as an example of someone with amazing faith. In Matthew, she starts by calling him Lord, Son of David. It's like a title for someone. So you might talk about the king in a sort of in a way if you didn't know him very well. So she starts off with that. But after this encounter, what she does is she just calls him Lord. So it's like the idea of starting by calling someone the king and then talking about them as my friend. Or for me, I could talk about Claire Gage, but actually if I describe my relationship, I'd say my wife, my best friend. She recognizes him not only as Lord of the Jews, but of her Lord. Her relationship to him has changed. Jesus responds in verse 29, then he said to her, "For saying that you may go, the demon has left your daughter." Now, Matthew's account, Jesus is recording saying, "Great is your faith. You have amazing trust in me." Now, in the Gospels, only two people does Jesus hold up as having great or a strong faith. And she's one of them. The other one is also a Gentile, a centurion. And both of them, who kind of experienced life on the outside, both have healings done from far away. Notice he doesn't go and heal the daughter. He does it from a distance. Because he's making a point. At the moment, the Gentiles, they're further out. But through him, he's going to bring them in. Those who are far away will one day be near because of Jesus. So Mark 7 is teaching us that we should go to Jesus. Firstly, with humility and persistence. Now, suffering, when we go through suffering, no one likes going through suffering, but it can humble us, can't it? It can knock away some of those brash edges that we have and that we put up in our life. It makes us feel weak. It makes us feel vulnerable. It can strip away the temporary comfort we feel in order so that we can feel true and lasting comfort through Christ. So that means we go to Jesus not with pride, but like in the hymn we sung last week, "Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to the cross I cling." We come empty just as we are. But we don't give up when life is hard. We keep on seeking God, so don't stop. If you're struggling, well, persevere. Use this woman as an example. See where she's looking. Look to Christ. So we go with humility and persistence. And lastly, we go with confidence and trust. You see, Jesus wants to grow our faith during these hard times. We can trust him, even if it's hard. That doesn't mean we go with arrogance, but confidence. Confidence in who he is and what he's done for you. You see, Jesus always brings healing to those who come to him in faith. That healing might not look like the kind of healing we expect or that we want to see. But ultimately, he will always bring about the best kind of healing for those who come to him in faith. If someone asked you, "Are you a Christian?" I wonder how you would answer them. Well, there might be three different ways that someone might answer that question. They might say, "Of course I'm a Christian. I attend church regularly. I was confirmed by the Bishop of Bath and Wells. I've served on the PCC for many years. Of course I'm a Christian. Why wouldn't I be?" Okay. Someone might ask you, "Are you a Christian?" You say, "Well, I don't think so. I don't think I'm good enough for that. I've got too many questions. I've done too many bad things to call myself a Christian. Maybe one day I'll feel differently." Or maybe you might answer it like this: "Well, I suppose I am. It all started when my daughter was in a terrible condition, but I sought this Jesus out. I was so desperate, but I'd heard great things about him, so I went along. It wasn't easy. I didn't feel like I belonged at first, but I knew I had to go to him. And I did, and now things are different. I see the world in a new way. I don't know why he was so kind to me, but I know I'll never stop being thankful. And now I want others to go to him too.